I'm a fourth-year medical student. I'm graduating this year. I will be ideally an intern at Bayview Medical Center come the end of June, early July. As was mentioned, we're going to put the bar really low just because I haven't had a whole lot of time to think about this. And this is a story that really doesn't have an end right now. And I'm not going to lie, I don't think it's a particularly upbeat one at the moment. Robbie is a classmate of mine. Dr. Redgrave is also my advisor. And Dr. Chi actually advised me when I was on surgery. So I'm surrounded by a lot of amazing people behind me and in the crowd. This is a story I've written about in a lot of different ways, but never one that I really speak out loud because it's very difficult to try and share. About 15 years ago, 15 years ago in the summer, I was hanging off the edge of a bridge thinking about when I would let go because I had a very difficult time growing up at that point. It was around that time when I recognized that I was gay, was homosexual, and I grew up in a town called Zion, which was very religious. I grew up in a Roman Catholic family, and my father, Carl G. Street, his name is Butch. Just let that sink in. Vietnam vet, was in a biker gang after that, and was a lumberjack. So if anybody ever says nurture was the issue, I would like to point out my family. So about 15 years ago, I was hanging off a bridge, and I don't know, I didn't know where to go at that point. And I didn't know, I honestly, to this day, I still can't figure out what possessed me to actually crawl back over the railing, but I did. And I came up with a very solid plan of how to get out of my town. I'm going to do very good at school, I'm going to get into a really good college, and then I will never look back. And I did very well in school. And I went to a really good college, University of Chicago, which was amazing. And I was out when I was there, right up off the bat. And I met with a lot of students even during my freshman year. We started an organization called Queer Religious, trying to understand the intersections of religious and queer identities. And I became a student leader within my first year for that. I then moved on to one of our larger groups, and then was even recruited by the administration to sit on an advising committee to figure out how they can support LGBT individuals. It resulted in the creation of an LGBT resource center the year after I graduated. That's one thing I'm really proud of, was actually trying to advocate for that. I took some time off after undergrad because, unlike a few people I know, I had no idea I wanted to be a doctor. I really don't like doctors. I still don't like doctors. It's kind of strange. But there was an instant... there was an incident in college when I became very ill and very standard viral prodrome, swollen glands, just feeling achy, not feeling great, and I wasn't sure if it was just finals or if I was actually sick. And I went to a doctor, and she went through all the basic stuff, and then I revealed, like, oh, and I have a boyfriend, but he's doing fine. And she's like, oh, you should get an HIV test. And I'm like, well, I can't do that. I'm not out to my parents, and I'm on their insurance. She's like, well, then you're going to have to go somewhere else. And she walked out and never came back. So that was a point that, like, I've explained to a few people. When I get angry, I can try and channel it and motivate it, motivate me to do something else. So that's kind of what got me into med school, was, like, I felt like she was a horrible doctor, and I never wanted anybody else to feel that way ever again. So I eventually found myself applying to medical school after taking a few years off. I was working in an LGBT health center. I was also moonlighting at the largest gay bar in Chicago, Sidetrack, if you've ever gone. You can get a free drink if you say you know Carl. But then I came to Hopkins, and I loved Hopkins. I loved Hopkins from the interview right out the gate. The doctor who interviewed me looked at my application and said, you can be out, and we think you should be here. And he was the only person who said that out of all the schools I was lucky enough to interview at. Duke rejected me because I said I still donate blood even though I'm gay. And Hopkins wanted me because I was gay and because I was advocating for a vulnerable population. And I did that at Hopkins. I've been doing that very loudly I think some people get many, many emails from me. I think those who are familiar with Hopkins know that I probably rival Donna Magid in terms of emails. And so I started working with the Gertrude Stein Society, which covers all three schools on the East Baltimore campus, and revitalized that. And my efforts were recognized by the Diversity Leadership Council that covers all of Hopkins. And they started looking at diversity not just as race and ethnicity, but also sexual and gender minorities, and looking more even at socioeconomic class, which is great. I've taken my work national. I am an advisor for the American Medical Association's Board of Trustees, the American Medical Student Association, and I sit on the board of the Gay and Lesbian Medical Association. I give my resume because I like to point out that I've been thinking about this and writing about this for a long time. And normally I can keep it very professional, but right now it's very personal because I'm kind of afraid of the dialogue that's happening right now around Hopkins. And it has nothing to do with politics. It has nothing to do with race. It has everything to do with what I felt like in the 90s when people compared me to pedophiles and people engaging in bestiality. And I still remember meeting with one of the deans here after I finished PED saying, I loved pediatrics, but I'm terrified of what people will think of me if I'm a pediatrician and I'm out. And he said, I understand. And I appreciated that he understood, but that also meant that he knows that people still think that. And it's very hard to think of yourself as dangerous or to have other people think of you as dangerous or deviant or other. And given what some people have said about us, again, lately, I and many other students, not just myself, I don't think I spearheaded this. This was a very collective response. We exercised our right to free speech, to say we do not agree. We exercised our right to petition, to organize, and we say we do not wish to associate. And very much like our own personal right or our own ability that during your marriage, you get to choose who gets to stand up next to you. This is my best man, this is my bridesmaid, and they get to speak for us in a very meaningful way. But when if they get drunk that night before, if they say something out of line, I get to disinvite them because they no longer represent what I think are the ideals of our union with medicine. And that's what's really been motivating me. And it's become very personal because I remember in 2003, after Lawrence v. Texas, first I heard of it was the Chicago Sun-Times paper in front of my grandfather, and he looked at the headline, he's like, can you believe these antichrist bastards? I still have that newspaper framed in my house now. And this past year, when Marilyn thankfully passed same-sex marriage, I was shocked. I was very pleased, but I was shocked, and I'm like, oh, no, I guess that means I should propose. I did in Hawaii, which was the first state to actually really bring up this issue. So I just wanted to bring that up because I wanted to provide a personal face to what's going on, because it's been very, very painful, and I have not slept very well in the past few days. And I just wanted the people to know that. And thank you for your time.